My name is Rich. I am husband to the phenomenal Emily. I am father to the phenomenal Izzy, Rubes, and Jonah. And I am here to talk to you today about the creation story, Genesis chapter 1. I think it's great that the Bible starts with two messages I take from that story, at least. The first one, that story tells us about God. It tells us about here God the Creator, about his majesty, his sovereignty, his creativity, how when God turns up and does something, he doesn't just tick the box and go, yeah, I've done it. He goes above and beyond, and we see with the vastness, the beauty, the depth of creation, the breadth of it, he didn't just create the world, he created the world. He really turned up and did that. Secondly, and what we're going to lean into today, the story then tells us about how God sees us, our place in creation, how God sees us. And that's the bit when obviously the topic of, give us a passage that's really impacted your life. That is the passage that has impacted my life way more than any other passage in the Bible. Seeing and learning and really buying into how God sees me changes how I see me, which then changes how I act, how I think, how I do, how I perceive, how I everything, who I am. It changes how I see other people, how I treat other people. And so I think the best way to demonstrate that to you is a graph. For the purposes of the tape, thank you, the graph is very simple. The graph has down the vertical axis, very good, good, and not so good. Along the bottom, it has six icons currently, representing light, representing sky, land, sea, representing plants, representing the sun, the moon, the stars, representing things that fly and things that swim. I was more pleased than I should have been with the flying fish icon for that. And genuinely. And then finally, land animals. And it says in Genesis chapter 1, firstly, and God saw the light, that it was good. God saw that the light was good, sorry. And then five more times, God saw that it was good. And that gives us our very basic graph of a horizontal line of creation, good. Consistency, I find, is good with deities. Obviously, this isn't finished. But working through those things there, for all of you, there will be stuff in creation, in nature, that you think is amazing. It'll be different for all of you. Maybe you love mountains, maybe you love beaches, maybe you love the sea or waterfalls or meteor showers or shooting stars or sunsets. Maybe it's the taste of strawberries, the smell of flowers, the sounds of birdsong, sand beneath your feet. The list could be much, much longer than what I've thrown there, and you'll all have different things. Personally, the bird of prey show at Warwick Castle is breathtaking. Incredible, I'd really recommend it, but that's off topic. There are some phenomenal things up there that you're going for. Each of you will be like, you're really into whatever it is up there, and it'll be different. But obviously, we know that graph's not complete yet. So verse 26 and then verse 27 says, when we get there. Verse 26, then God said, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. 27. So, God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. He created them. And this updates our graph. I don't think you'll be shocked by the slight change in the graph. But the graph has now got a bit more interesting. And I think it's important initially to acknowledge that for all the amazing things that were discussed, and no doubt you came up with some of yourself as well, the amazing things within creation, that when God sees us, he sees us as greater than those things. Not to put those things down, but he says those things are good. But human beings, I, are better. In God's eyes, we are above the rest of that creation. And that's a really important thing to remember, that whenever you see something that you're like, oh, that is that sunset, that holiday bit, that whatever it is for you, that animal that you love, it doesn't matter. That however great you feel about that thing there, God looks at you and goes, yeah, I agree. It's good. But when I look at you, better. But I'm not here today to tell you that God thinks you're very good, because God doesn't think you're very good. Verse 31, please. And this is where it's slightly different to the other previous ones here. It says, then God looked over all he had made, and he saw that it was very good. And he's being quite specific there. He's deliberately said something different, at least how I read it, because he's not looking at humans and going, very good. He's stepping back and going, the entire thing is now very good. And obviously, go back to the graph. Everything beforehand was good, which feels like an undersell, but that's where we're at. And what he's done now is he's added in us. He's added in you and I, and he's gone, you're not very good. You're so fantastic that you elevate the entirety of creation to a new level, which is pretty astounding. But that's how God sees us. That's how God sees me. That's how God sees you. That's how God sees the person next to you, your neighbor, your great, 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 great grandmother, everyone. Which is, for me, has why I'm up here talking about it, because I'm going, that has, realizing and buying into that changes everything. God looks at me and goes, I'm not just fantastic. I elevate creation. We all elevate creation. And that's a wonderful thing in God's eyes. We are all God's children, and we are loved as such. So anyone who's for some reason thinking, that's a lovely thing to say, Rich, but he doesn't think that about me. He's talking about Adam and Eve. He's talking about other people. That's not the case. One of the most fantastic things about God is that whatever I do, I cannot make him love me anymore. That's fantastic because, on the flip side, whatever I do, I cannot make God love me any less. And that's the same for everybody. He loves each of us equally. We are God's children. He loves us as such. And therefore, when he looks at each of us individually, when he looks at mankind, when he looks at human beings, we all elevate creation in God's eyes. We are that fantastic, that off the chart, that phenomenal. And buying into that, acknowledging that, realizing that, changes an awful lot of things. We're all in the, there's so much in the Bible about how we are loved equally, how we are, the John 3:16, we are, God so loved the world, not some of the world, not most of the world, not enough of the world. The world, Galatians, it talks about how we're all one in Christ Jesus. Peter in Acts talks about that God doesn't show favoritism. That elevation is for each and every one of us, regardless of whether you buy into Christianity, whether you don't, whether you think of a high opinion of yourself, whether you have a low opinion of yourself. In God's eyes, he thinks you're phenomenal. He thinks you elevate creation. So, hi, my name is Rich, husband to the phenomenal Emily, father to the phenomenal Isabella, the phenomenal Reuben, the phenomenal Jonah, son, brother, son-in-law, brother-in-law, cousin, uncle, nephew, neighbor, colleague, friend, to the phenomenal, insert name here. And I am definitely not better than anyone else, and I'm definitely not perfect, but I am fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God, and I am loved. This I know, for the Bible tells me so.
Thank you, Phenomenal Rich. Let us just pause for a minute and let us just let it just sink in for a minute. That we all like that. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We're all phenomenal in God's eyes. And he loves us. He cares for us. He wants the best for us. So why don't you just close your eyes for a minute and let that just sink through. Father, and I thank you that you have created us in your image. Each and every one of us. Even when we sometimes don't feel it. When we sometimes don't believe it. When we sometimes just think low of ourselves. Lord, but when you look at us, you love us. When you look at us, you see something that is fearfully and wonderfully made in your image. And Lord, I pray that you will help us to remember this. To remember that in creation it was very good when you made humans. And we help elevate creation to that level. Lord, I pray that we will take that away this morning when we go home. Lord, that you will help us to see each and every one of us in the same way. The people that we rub shoulders with maybe tomorrow. Maybe the annoying driver who is hugging the middle lane tomorrow, wherever we're going. Lord, that we will be reminded that each person is made in your image. Lord, I pray that you will help us and instill this in our hearts. In Jesus' almighty name. Amen. This morning I want to read one of my favorite passages in the Bible. Jem read it already last week. We haven't even talked about this. It's the passage that described that Jesus and Peter walked on water. I find it an intriguing and fascinating story. And this story has become significant in my life. And this morning I want to share a few things around this passage. And I would like to share some personal stories as well. And I hope that this will be inspiring to you and challenging to you maybe. But let us read the passage first. Let's go to Matthew chapter 14. And we're going to read from verse 22. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake. And while he sent the people home, and after sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray, and night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them walking on the water. And when the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage, I am here." And then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. "Save me, Lord," he shouted. And Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. "You have so little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped and then the disciples worshipped him. "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. Now, before we dive into the story, I think it's always good to see what the backdrop of this story is, because this story follows straight after one of Jesus' extraordinary miracles. He just fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And they had 12 baskets of food left. And after this, Jesus insists that his disciples cross the lake, probably to get some rest after a very long day, and Jesus sends the people home. Jesus went then into the hills after he had sent them all home, and he was there to pray, and night fell when he was alone. And this is the moment that it all kicks off. The disciples are in the boat trying to get to the other side of the lake, but they hit some really bad weather. The Bible tells us that it's now around 3 a.m. and they are in real trouble as they are fighting heavy waves. Now, try to picture the scene. You have just witnessed an amazing miracle. Your master has just taught you across the lake, and you are probably all looking forward to having some rest, a sit down, a good night's sleep. But no, not really. It's in the middle of the night and they are in trouble because they have landed in a storm. Who of you has ever been in a storm? Who of you have ever been in a storm while you were on a boat? Yeah, quite a few of you. Huh? So you probably know a little bit what we're talking about. Well, I've been in a storm on a boat while we were on a sailing DTS with Youth with a Mission in the Mediterranean. And it sounds all very idyllic and amazing, but I can tell you it wasn't. Imagine being on a 100-foot sailing vessel with 25 people, sharing a cabin with three other blokes and just having one bunk bed to sleep and half a bunk bed to put your luggage for 3 months. Do you picture the scene? In my opinion, a romantic getaway in the Mediterranean looks slightly different than this. And you might sit here and think, well, it's the Mediterranean, sun, beach, nice weather. Well, this might be the case in the summer, but when you're sailing in October from Sicily to Corsica, we hit a storm. And it was a 3 days and three night storm in 4-7. It was so much fun. So I know what it means to be in a storm on the water. But let me tell you a secret. I absolutely loved it. The majority on board, they didn't. I'm going to spare you the details, but I was the only one who wasn't ill on the boat. I was the last man standing in the galley cooking while the pots and the pans were going literally everywhere in the galley, and I was trying to make pasta and pasta sauce and all of that sort of stuff. And when I was off duty, I went to the front of the ship and I had the time of my life because I was waiting for every wave to come over me and just spray me and splash me. It was so much fun, well, in my opinion. But let me go back to our story, because as my experience during this storm gave this story a deeper understanding of what Peter went through. So picture the scene. You have a boat with the disciples. They're now in a storm, trying to keep the ship steady, trying to stay on course, trying to get to shore as quickly as possible. And suddenly they see someone coming towards them. And the Bible tells them that they were terrified. Who wouldn't be terrified? They exclaimed that it must be a ghost. And I think it's understandable. Of course it's understandable. Humans can't walk on water. So they concluded that it must be a ghost. What would our reaction be when you are in a storm and you are trying to stay afloat and suddenly you see someone on the water and who is walking? Would you be terrified? And would you think that you saw a ghost? That actually you're still everything together and you're thinking, am I hallucinating? What's going on? Luckily for them, it's Jesus. And he speaks to them. Have you noticed that what Jesus' response is to them, he speaks to them and says, don't be afraid, take courage, I am here. Did you notice that he didn't say, hello, it's me, Jesus? He simply says, I am here. The detail in the Bible is always extraordinary. With the accounts of Jesus walking on water in Matthew, Mark and John, they're slightly different, except for what Jesus says to his disciples, because that's the most important phrase. All three repeat exactly the same words. So Jesus assumes that they know who he is, and he doesn't even mention his name. Have you ever thought about how far away Jesus must have been? They didn't recognize him, as they thought he was a ghost. He must have shouted rather loudly to them. As I do remember the noise during the storm. You have the water, you have the boat splashing on the water, you've got the waves, you've got the wind, and it's dark. The Bible doesn't tell us that they knew straight away that it was Jesus. And we can conclude that they were not certain or doubtful. As Peter says in verse 28, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on water. So we had an extraordinary story already, and this becomes even better. Are you surprised about Peter's response? Because I'm not. I see Dave nodding. No. Peter is very impulsive, the sort of person that speaks before he thinks. Again, picture the scene. You are on the boat in the storm. You see a man walking on water. You think it's a ghost. This person starts to speak to you. You are afraid, and then you respond, well, if it's really you, tell me to come, not swimming, or in a boat. No, no. Tell me to come and walk on water. I don't know what you would have done. When I was in the boat in the storm, I have to tell you, the last thing what I probably wanted to do was actually leave the boat, as I felt rather reasonably safe in the boat. Not Peter. He proposes, let me come to you. The next extraordinary thing happens. Jesus doesn't confirm that he is Jesus. He just responds with two very simple words. Yes, come. And that's it. And this was enough for Peter. Out of the boat he jumps and he starts walking on water towards Jesus. And he then starts to look at the wind and the waves and he's terrified and starts to sink. He calls out to Jesus and Jesus, being Jesus, saves him. And then says to Peter, you have so little faith, why did you doubt me? Now, I don't know how many preachings you have heard in your lifetime on this passage. I have several. And some preachers approach this from the angle of the other disciples who stayed in the boat. Some approach this from Peter's angle and his little faith. Some approach this from the angle of Jesus who saved Peter. My approach this morning is going to be that we need to approach this from all these angles. And this is something that we all go through at times. But let me explain you what I mean. I said already that the last thing that I wanted to do when I was in a 4-7 storm, that I wanted to go out of the boat. And some might want to get out away as fast as they can because they just want it to end. I can imagine, I remember some of the conversations I had with the other people that were there. They're just thinking, how much longer is this going to last? And then you had the words from the captain, another 2 days. And you must have seen their faces. Just imagine that you are in a storm in a boat. Who would stay in the boat? This is where you feel safe-ish. You know the environment, you know the people that you are with, and you can think the storm will pass and things will calm down at some point. For us, it did, after 3 days and 3 nights. It was an amazing experience trying to sleep in a storm. But anyway, and then you have Peter, very impulsive, saying to Jesus, just call me and I come walking on water. And he took the plunge. He went for it. He took a step of faith, a massive step of faith. You can say about Peter what you want, but he was the only disciple ever and probably the only human being who ever walked on water. Little faith or no little faith, he's the one that walked on water. I wonder if they had conversations like this. So, Peter, how was it? How was it walking on water? Was it cool? How did it feel? Did you get wet feet? I can already imagine the conversations when he is back. And the issue Peter had was that he started to look at the circumstances. He started to look at the wind and the waves and fear gripped him instead, and he began to sink. But I told you already that my experience in the storm on a boat made me look differently at this story. And let me explain you how. When you are in a storm, and people who've been in a storm on a boat will know this, your boat goes up and down. That's what happens. And when you are in a heavy storm, this motion is even bigger. And the size of your boat has an impact on this as well. So we had times during the storm that our boat went down and the only thing we could see was the water. And then the boat went back up and the only thing we could see was the clouds and the sky. So here we have Peter on the water in a storm with heavy waves. Now, have you ever considered the following? The Bible doesn't tell us this, but it could have been something like this. Because the Bible tells us that there were heavy waves. And in my opinion, heavy waves are heavy waves. It's not a wave like this or like this. It's probably humongous waves. We had waves to 7 to 8 meters high when we were in the storm. And he's walking and he sees Peter and the waves come and then can't see Jesus anymore because the only thing he sees is the wave. Do you get the picture? I'm just trying to help you visualize what Peter is experiencing. He probably just lost sight of Jesus. Would our response have been the same? You're on the water and walking, you can't see Jesus anymore. Would you suddenly be afraid? It doesn't really matter what exactly happened here. What does matter is that Peter walked on water and it was the only disciple who ever walked on water. And what can we learn from this? Well, I mentioned that we need to look at this story from different angles all at once. And the best thing to illustrate this is by some personal examples. At the start today, I mentioned that this story has been and still is very significant in my life. When I finally graduated and had my degree, I went to work in a petrochemical factory for the first 5 years of my working career. And it was while I was working there one night when I was on night shift and I had to check all the machinery, it's when God spoke to me. And God said to me, literally, almost literally, look around you. What do you see? And I said, I see machines. And God said, what do you want to do? Do you want to carry on working the rest of your life with machines? Or do you want to work with people? And I said to God, I said, I would like to work with people. And he said, good. I want you to become a teacher. I said, okay then. Thinking, me, teacher? I remembered my years in secondary school when I was rebellious and in trouble and all that sort of stuff. I was thinking, really? Is that what you want from me? And so I started to look into this. And what I needed to do was I needed to go back to school on Saturdays, working full time and doing studies on Saturday. And I went to my boss and I said, look, I want to do this. And he said, okay. So can I have some educational leave and all that stuff? Because I sometimes had to work in the weekends. So he said, yeah, it's fine. We can arrange that and all those things. And then I finished my studies and then I had to make a decision. What was I going to do? Because God had asked for me to become a teacher. So I had to resign from my work and go into teaching. Now, the system in Belgium is that you start back in September, just like here, but they all finish in June. They've got 2 months holiday, by the way. Yeah. Oh, look at their faces. Oh, look at their faces. And so I had to make a decision. And I went to my boss and I said to him, I said, I'm going to resign. And he said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to teach. I said, when, where? I said, I have no idea because I had no job. Nothing at all. And I told my colleagues, and my colleagues literally said to me, you're crazy. They said to me, you're crazy. And I said, why? I said, why do you want to give such a well-paid job to become a teacher? I said, because God called me to do that. And then they said, oh, you're completely crazy. They thought I'd lost my marbles. But I had a conversation with my boss. And my boss said to me, I said, I have to applaud you because you're doing what I always wanted to do years ago but never had the courage to do. And he said, why do you have this courage? I said, because God is with me. I said, I know he will provide for me. And so I resigned, finished my job at a petrochemical factory the end of August, and the 1st of September came. And I had no job. And the first week, September, was finished, and I had no job. And the second week of September was finished, and I still had no job. And the third week was finished, and I had no job. And September was gone, and I had no job. And that's when the doubt starts. That's when you start to think, have I heard correctly? Have I made the wrong decision here? What's going on? And then I went to a meeting where all sorts of other teachers were, and I came away from there with almost a full-time job as a teacher. And that taught me that when God asks you to step out in faith, you need to trust him. And you know what I've learned over the years, that God's timing is not our timing. We sometimes want the answer tomorrow or today, but God sometimes is teaching you, you just need to trust me. Just trust me. 5 years later, God seems to do things in my life between 5 years, yeah, in that sort of remit. 5 years later, I was working, volunteering for a national youth organization. And we had the option to become recognized by the government and receive funding from them and all that stuff. And it asked me, do you want to come and work for us full time? Because you can do this full time then. I said, yeah, that's fine. He said, the only problem is we can only employ you from January, but I was teaching. And I had to resign from the teaching job in June because I didn't want to start a whole new 10 months because I think, well, I'm going to put the school into problems because then I need to resign sort of halfway and then have all these students and all that sort of malarkey. And I didn't want to do that because I think, well, God, that's not the way to do this. And so I had no work, September till December. And I was thinking, Lord, how am I going to do this? But this is again what you've asked for me. Now, God provided for all my financial needs for those 4 months by some individuals that God put it on their hearts to provide for me. And again, I realized and saw that God, when you trust him and you put your trust in him, that he will look after you. And this has happened over and over and over and over again in my life. That God asks something from me to do what isn't easy, what is sometimes very difficult. But every time I've seen that when we put our trust in God, that he will provide for us, that he will look after us. My question for all of us this morning is, where are we this morning? Has God called you to do something? Maybe something new? Maybe there's something what is outside of your comfort zone? Outside of what is normal for you? My question to you is, what are you waiting for? You might be missing out on an amazing adventure, even when it looks like something that seems impossible. There's one thing that nobody can ever take away from Peter. That's his experience of walking on water. Everything what I've experienced so far in my life, I wouldn't want to miss at all. I'm so thankful for God to come through and to provide in those things. And I've been on an amazing adventure, and that adventure hasn't finished. Because I know nothing is impossible for God. It's very often when things seem impossible for us, that's where God starts to work. That's where his spirit takes over and provides for us. And maybe you sit here this morning and maybe you are feeling that you are in the middle of the storm, that you are walking on water and that you have lost sight of Jesus. But you know what? He's there for you. He's ready to save you, ready to support you, ready to pull you up, and never forget that he loves you dearly and that you are phenomenal. You need to call out to him. And the rest of the church will rally around you and support you in prayer and in other ways if necessary. Let me pray. Father, I want to thank you for your word and for the stories that are in there that are life-transforming, life-changing. Lord, I want to thank you for the example that Peter is to each and every one of us. Lord, and I pray that you will meet us where our needs need to be met. Lord, maybe there's people in this room, Lord, that at the moment are going through a storm and maybe have lost sight of you. Lord, I pray that you will calm the storm in their lives and that they will see you. That they will experience your saving hand that pulls them out of the water and gets them back into the safety of the boat where you are. Because that's where Peter ended back up, back in the boat with Jesus. And that's the best place to be. Lord, I pray for the people in this room that maybe you're asking to step out in faith. That maybe are standing on the edge of the boat. And maybe need just a little nudge to step out and go on this amazing adventure with you and walk on water. Lord, I pray that you will give them the courage to do this. Lord, maybe you're asking from people in the church here to step out of their comfort zone, maybe to get involved with the creche or the Sunday school or the youth work or other aspects of church life. Lord, I pray that you will give them the strength and the courage to do this. In Jesus' name. Lord, I pray that you will continue to guide us when maybe we hit the heavy waves. But Lord, I pray like Rich shared this morning that we will never forget that you love us and that we are created in your image. In Jesus' almighty name. Amen.